From EAA Air Venture in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, here are your hosts, Steve Bush and Fareed Guillot, with EAA Radio Live.
Welcome to the Welcome Center, EA Radio Live, Air Venture Day 3. I'm Fareed Guillot, and we're going to be talking in the next hour about the Navy, because today is Navy Day, and I have two distinguished guests with me, Rear Admiral Patrick E. McGrath of the United States Navy, and Major General John M. Crowley of the United States Marine Corps. Let's welcome them. And first of all, let's just get to know our guests. First of all, Major General John Crowley of the United States Marine Corps. Tell us a little bit about your background, what you fly, what you've flown, and what you do now for the United States Marine Corps.
Well, good morning, everybody. John Crowley. I am a Major General, United States Marine Corps, and I've been in service going on my 34th year. I came into Naval of Aviation I'm a product of the Naval ROTC program out of University of South Carolina, and I have flown, I went into the attack helicopter community initially, and spent 6 years on active duty. I'm also one of the reserve general officers here, and currently I command operations in Latin America, working out of Miami. I work the 33 countries of Latin America as a general officer, and I'm also the deputy of Marine Forces Command in Norfolk, Virginia. My flying background got started out in South Carolina when I was in college, and then migrated. I knew I wanted to be a Marine first and then a naval aviator, sort of like Alfred Cunningham, the first Marine aviator from 1912. And first of all, we want to extend a happy birthday of Centennial Aviation to our partners in the United States Naval Service, and that we're celebrating this year, and next year we hope to be sitting up here and celebrating the Centennial of Marine Corps Aviation, which happened 1 year later. But we all have the same common roots.
Welcome. Thank you for coming. And also, Rear Admiral Patrick E. McGrath, the United States Navy, you are the Deputy Commander of Naval Air Forces and your Director of the Centennial Naval Aviation Task Force. Tell us a little bit about how your career went.
Well, I'm a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, graduated in 1979, went to flight school, became a helicopter pilot, and moved to San Diego, California. And I'm a throwback. I'm a Cold Warrior. I chased Soviet Union submarines for 11 years on active duty, became a reserve officer, and continued flying. I flew the H-2 helicopter, the H-60 helicopter, and 4 years ago, the Air Boss, the three-star in charge of Navy aviation, came to me and said, hey, the Centennial Naval Aviation is coming up. What I'd like you to do is put something together so that throughout the country we can actually talk to people about the history of naval aviation, what naval aviation has done. So we were working on that for this task force for 3 years, and EAA AirFest is part of the 32 events we're running throughout the country talking to people about naval aviation.
And we're happy to have all of those here from the armed forces. Just a note, anyone who was here early this morning, you saw Southwest Airlines 737 arrive, and they picked up veterans to head off to Washington, D.C. on an honor flight to visit the World War II Memorial, and they'll be back a little bit later today. And if you're around and you see that 737 jet arrive, be sure to go out to Celebration Way here on the East and welcome them home. We certainly thank all of our veterans, past and present, for all the service they've given to our country. Let's start out with more of a kind of a maybe a little bit of a philosophical question. You all hold senior positions in your branches of service. How has aviation evolved as a mission in your particular branch? Admiral, start with you.
Well, ultimately, I mean, when you go back to the beginning for 100 years ago for naval aviation, a ship at sea is limited by what it can see. And originally, the line of sight for a ship was essentially you stand on the tallest mast and you look out there, and because of the curvature of the Earth, it's about 7 miles. When they started getting radar, they could get out to about 13 miles. But if you add an aircraft to that ship and you fly that aircraft with a radar out 100 miles and put it at 10,000 feet, you can pretty much see everything that's out there and everything that's coming. I started when I was flying. We do the same thing that people did in the 30s and the 40s, dawn and dusk patrol. Take off first thing in the morning, get a lay of the land out there. And if you think of sea battles before aviation, which involved, you're going back to Trafalgar, very big ships lining themselves up, lining their guns up each other and shooting. And then you get to Coral Sea, where the ships never saw each other, and they had a battle in Midway, where they never saw each other. So aviation is about extending the eyesight and the visibility of what a ship can see, and then projecting the power far beyond the horizon.
And certainly we're going to talk a little bit about how that power has been projected over the course of the history of naval aviation, but also how it started and what it looks like today. We'll talk a little bit about that. Major Crawley, do you have any comments to add about how things have evolved in your branch of service?
Certainly. If you look at the United States Marine Corps in the past and today, one thing separates us. You could say, well, why aren't you just a part of the Air Force or part of the Army? Truly, what the Marine Corps brings to the table is a projection of naval power. And truly, when it's fitting that both of us sit here together to talk about naval aviation and naval power, because you have the Marine Air Ground Task Force. We call it the MAGTAF. And that is composed of a ground combat element, an aviation combat element, and combat logistics. So you get the total package that's able to come from the sea, maneuver from the sea with our naval counterparts here, and truly it is a force multiplier for what we do in expeditionary operations. Not only for kinetic operations, but the mobility that aviation gives to the United States Marine Corps, of what naval aviation gives to the United States Navy, and projection of power is not only what we call a kinetic thing of destroying targets at 100 miles or 200 miles. No, it's also projection of power and creating time and space so decision makers can react to problems in the world. Look in January of 2010. The Navy and United States Marine Corps were the first ones on the scene of the terrible disaster that was in Haiti after the earthquake. And then there were the floods. And you had a naval task force with Marines aboard, projecting power, helping move utilities, supplies ashore. And so it's a total type of package that's delivered there by the naval service in total.
Here's a thought. When someone comes up to you and you have to explain what the role of Marine Corps is, can you put that in a sentence or two? What their mission is? Because maybe people
Wait a minute. You're asking a general officer and an admiral to put something in just one short phrase, you know?
Okay, we'll give you a paragraph.
And you noticed earlier he said senior officers. I think he said senior citizens, but that's okay too. The role of the United States Marine Corps is projection of power from the sea. Many of us have sort of taken that for granted in the past 10 years, because the United States Marine Corps has been in two major land campaigns for the past 10 years. But we have fixed-wing squadrons that deploy out aboard with the naval carriers. You have continuing deployments at sea, and we have returned to that, and you'll see more of that in the future.
And what would you tell people about the Navy? What is their mission? Because obviously people think about ships, but it's just so complex as far as that goes.
I'd say, in a nutshell, it's maintaining freedom of the seas throughout the world. That includes forming coalitions to keep the seas free, stopping other people from giving us problems as far as freedom of the sea, and projecting power throughout the world when we need it.
And I just wanted to switch gears for just a second. And as which one of you has been here before? And I think one of you has not been to AirVenture.
I have never been here before.
No, we're both newbies at this. Wanted to for years, and this is my first opportunity to be here.
What are your first impressions?
It's immense, and God bless America, by the way. I don't know where else on the face of the earth you can bring this much technology and with the legacy of technical expertise that we have put into the air for all these years, hell, for 100 years that we've done this, and it makes you proud to be a United States Marine and American citizen to see this, and our colleagues that are here internationally as well. But what a great display of aviation craftsmanship. And as Pat was saying earlier, you come here, you come into the main gate, and there's a lot of other things going on in the world right now, and you put a smile on your face, and those people who want to be here are, and are sharing each other's adventures, each other's expertise, each other's passion for aviation. And what a wonderful legacy of success this exposition is, for sure.
Well, we're glad to have you both here. We hope you have a good time and try to stay dry. And we'll talk a little bit about the weather when we come back. You're listening to EAA Radio Live.